On our program this afternoon, we have John Vanskelvoet. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Doug. How are you?
Well, I'm just fine.
Good.
Good to have you back here again.
Well, it's nice to be back.
It's like we used to do years ago.
That's right. That's right. It's nice to be able to be back.
Once in a while, yeah.
Don't kid yourself.
I think so, too.
Yep.
Well, last time you and I did the program a month ago, we kind of reminisced a lot about your childhood.
I was a horse trader. He ran a livery barn, and then he sold out his business to Bill Bronsma and Frank Griswold. And Bill carried on until he sold out to Butter Ehrman, and now it's, I think they call it Russ's Bronsma Transfer, Russ Bergen owns it.
Yeah.
Well, those of course were the days when a horse was king. There weren't very many automobiles.
Sure. Could your grandfather foresee the day when the horse business was going to get phased out?
I think he began to.
Did he?
Because automobiles began to come in a bit. See, my granddad died in 1918. He sold out in 1913. Bill Bronsma, he could foresee it because he began to get a few trucks, and Bill had the first taxi in town.
Really?
Yeah, Model T touring car, open car with side curtains.
How did you get a hold of the taxi?
I don't know.
They didn't have phones.
Sure they did.
A lot of people have phones?
Yeah, by that time they did.
Did
sure.
They?
And Bill's number was number 73.
Was it?
Sure, I remember that. Yeah, like I used to be able to remember quite a few telephone numbers that get back in those days.
Yeah.
Dornbus Fish House was number one.
Just one number?
Just one number. You called Central, and they dialed the number for you. Called the operator.
Oh, did the operator just answer when you picked up the phone?
Yes, she would say, number, please.
Oh.
Some of them said, number, please, very nicely, and some of them, number, please. But, sure. That brings back a little story. There was you remember Fibber McGee and Molly?
Oh, yes.
And Fibber always used to pick up the telephone. He'd say, hello, Mert.
Yeah, he'd always talk to Mert.
Well, there was one telephone operator who was a particular friend of mine, and I always used to call her Mert.
Uh-huh.
And she'd answer the telephone. I could always tell her voice. I'd say, hi, Mert. How are you? And give her the number.
Yeah.
And this past summer, I was sitting in Bob Steiner's drugstore, and a came walking up to me, and she says, hello, John. And I looked at her, and I couldn't place her. I just looked at her. She was with another young lady, and I knew her. And all of a sudden, I said, Mert. And she says, well, gosh, I didn't know whether you'd know me or not. I said, sure I did. I said, it took me a second or so to come to. But I think I don't know whether she recognized me or not, but the other girl told me, she says, I told Franny, I said, there's John Vanskelvoet sitting back there. So she just walked up to me and just stood there for a second.
Did you recognize the voice yet or not?
John? No. And she said, I wasn't sure whether you'd recognize me or not. And I said, why, sure, Mert, I couldn't forget you in the bed.
That had to be a few years ago.
That was a few years ago, yeah.
Well, there was number one telephone.
Yeah, number one was Dornbus, number two was Robbins, number three was Dr. Reynolds, number four... I don't remember who was number four. Number five was the Grand Trunk or Pier Marquette. And number five was the Grand Trunk. Number six was the Pier Marquette. Seven was James W. Oakes and Company.
Really?
And eight was the Tannery. Now, I don't know. I can't go on from there. But
if you want a taxi, you could
You could phone 73 and you'd get Bill Bronsman. You'd get your taxi.
Well, he'd have to leave his phone in, or did he have somebody there to answer?
There was somebody around the barn all the time. Most of the time, people slept there. somebody slept in the barn. He always had somebody around there. And so there was always somebody.
What was that taxi, a Ford?
Just a Ford Model T, you know. He used to ask Bill, my brother, and I once in a while to drive it. You didn't have to have a driver's license or a chauffeur's license back in those days.
Anybody could drive.
Anybody
that knew
could
how,
drive that knew how.
And you drove those different too, didn't you, John?
Oh,
I mean,
sure,
the gear was in the middle pedal.
Three pedals in there. One of them was let's see, how was that? You shoved it down, that was low, and then you let it come back, and that was high.
Yeah.
And the middle pedal was a reverse, and the other one was the brake. I think I could drive one of those yet.
Daryl Tamman has one.
Yeah, I know it. Somebody got to ask Daryl if he let me.
He took me for a ride in his once.
Did he?
And then we talked about my driving, but I'd never dare drive it unless I were in an open parking lot or something.
Well, I learned to drive one of those on one of Vin's trucks. Vin Brothers had that was a teaming transfer business, and they had horses, and their barn was across the street from our house down on Fulton Street, and my grandfather's barn was two doors west of our house. Oh, I was born and brought up where there were horses all the time, right from childhood up. And I remember they got a couple of little yellow, they called them yellow jitneys. They were just a Ford, no top on them or anything else, just a seat and a windshield and a box in the back of it. And they had two of them, and people used to say that Vin must have a dozen of those yellow trucks because they were all over town all the time. But anyway, one of them was standing out in the yard, and Bud Vin, who was a friend of mine, about my same age and playmate as we were kids, he says, "Let's put it in the garage." Or in the barn, it was in those days. The front end of the barn was where they kept the harnesses and stuff like that. And there was a sliding door between the barn where the horses were and that thing. And that sliding door was partly open before we tried to put that car in.
Mm-hmm.
After we put it in, it was all open. Because we just didn't stop it in time. So we took that one board right off of it. But, I think that it was beginning to... Well, of course, my grandfather was getting pretty old. He was 81 when he died in 1918. So he was he was 76 years old at that time. My gosh, you know, I'm darn near as old as that now myself.
Can you imagine that?
He thought he was an old man.
Yeah.
But
he got to see cars. I mean, he lived to see the advent of the automobile.
He rode with in cars. Of course, he couldn't drive, and he never had any intention to.
No.
But it was beginning to get that way. I remember one time we were driving a team of horses. We used to take care of these horses, and then we could drive them or take them anytime. We were lucky. We were born at a lucky age, and we were born under, a lucky star. Granddad never had much money. He trade horses and get a little money to boot and feed it to the rest of the horses.
Yeah.
But he had these horses there, and you kept them right back of the house. You couldn't do that today.
No.
And, we never got hydrophobia or flu or anything from the horses, and didn't smell too bad either. not my idea. Kids, and so we'd take care of these horses, and we could drive them, ride them, anything else anytime we wanted to. We'd just take a horse or a team of horses or whatever we wanted. I remember we used to hitch up a team. He had a hack one time or a. It wasn't really a hack. It was an enclosed body with a front seat was open like an automobile, like a limousine would be, where the chauffeur sat up in front. Well, this thing had that, and I remember it had a little communication business between the back seat and the front seat.
Oh, what was that like?
Well, it was like a little horn or something.
Oh, I see.
Could talk. It didn't have batteries or anything.
Yeah.
but you could talk to the driver, and it had headlights. You had candles in the headlights. You lit these candles. It used to be fun. We'd hitch up a team of horses at night and go riding around. It was rubber tired, so it was high class outfit. Ride around town, and you pick up kids, and well, sometimes you'd have a half dozen fellows and girls in the
And same as kids do today in a car.
In the car. And you were less apt to get in trouble because you couldn't get very far.
Yeah.
And it was mostly around town, but it was lots of fun. And then we used to ride horses. I rode horses since I was, well, I don't know how old, just a kid.
You never raced those rubber tired wagons when your dad wasn't looking or anything, did you, John? You wouldn't get in a little drag race downtown.
Yeah, we did that. And it didn't make any difference whether Granddad was looking or not. He was, that was all right.
Was that okay?
Oh, sure.
But could you?
Anytime.
I just wondered, I mean, young kids are young kids,
you know?
And that competitive spirit enters in there sometimes,
yeah.
You know.
Well, I did one time with me. I never forget this. This was after, I was about 16 years old at this time. And we had a little chestnut mare who was a dandy. This was after my, I think it was after Granddad died. No, it wasn't either, because if I was 16, why, he was still living. We had a road cart or a braking cart, two-wheeled sulky.
Mm-hmm.
Not like these race sulkies with rubber tires and all
that,
but a road cart like... Well, like they use out in Wyatt Earp's country and stuff like that. And I was driving this little horse, and the buggy had been, or cart had been standing in the yard all winter. And I don't know, somewhere or another, the strap broke off from it where the whole back strap was fastened, and there was a piece of wire attached to it. And I thought, oh, well, I was just going to ride around, that'd be all right. But Tony Eckins came along with his grocery wagon, and he had a long-legged bay gelding, and he was fast. He was a good horse.
Uh-huh.
Tony said, how about a race? I said, okay. And I forgot all about the Hoback. So we went up to, about where the Presbyterian Church is, maybe a block, maybe up to school. And we were both very foolish on the pavement, because the street was paved at that time. You should never have raced a horse on the pavement. But we did anyway.
On Franklin?
On Franklin. We raced from Franklin, and we were going down to, well, I don't know where we were going to quit, I guess at the Armory. And this Hoback strap or wire broke. So I put my foot up over the dashboard of the cart and tried to put on the horse's button. She kicked.
Oh.
And she kicked high, and one foot went into the buggy, into the cart, and the cart busted down, and, well, it all went to pieces. It was like the one wonderful one-horse shay. It just busted all to pieces.
Oh.
And, of course, I went down on the pavement, fell, and landed on the pavement. Remember, the horse was kicking, and she was still kicking. Oh, she was a beautiful little mare, and she was gentle as a lamb, but you couldn't touch her hind legs like that without speaking to her or anything, but what, she got nervous and
she kicked. Huh?
Kicked. Well, when the cart, when I put my foot on her, why, of course,
boy.
That was enough for her.
And it was the wrong thing to do.
So, but I thought rather than have the cart hitting her that I'd brace it. But,
yeah.
I guess I didn't know as much in those days as I do now. And the car, as I say, the cart went to pieces. Well, I hung on. And she dragged me from about where Camerad's funeral home is now till I went across the intersection of 2nd Street.
Oh.
And I was on my side.
You're just dragging on boards under you?
You're
just dragging on the pavement?
Nothing under me. And when I got through with that, my pants, I didn't have a coat on, my pants were... Well, I was right through the skin, I was bleeding from pavement burn. And there was a fellow by the name of John Peterson lived down there. I lived over there in the back of the People's Bank. And he was coming from work, and he stepped out on the curb and grabbed her and stopped her. Well, Tony picked up what was left of the buggy, or the road cart, and put it in his wagon, took it home. I'm lucky I wasn't hurt back then.
Yeah, boy, I'll say.
Kicked.
Yeah.
I wasn't kicked.
Oh.
But I was sure sore.
I'll bet
and
you.
I had, you talk about floor burns. Kids get floor burn playing basketball.
Yeah.
They don't know nothing about floor burns.
Yeah, and you can get dragged.
In those days,
horse.
I was peddling papers, making about $3 a week. I had two paper routes, so I made about $3 a week, and I bought my own clothes. So every week I went and paid John Vandenbush a buck on my clothes. And I don't know whether I was peddling papers at that time or working in the Weather Bureau. I worked in the Weather Bureau when I was 16,
oh.
So maybe that's where I was. But anyway, I went and paid John Vandenbush for the pair of pants and had to buy a new one.
Wow.
Another new one. Because these were only a couple weeks old.
Is that right?
But was all right.
Well, John, were you winning the race before the?
No, I think I was losing.
Were you?
That was a sad part of it. Tony Atkins lived for a good many years, and he used to kid me about it. That was on the, I think, the 17th of April, he used to say. I didn't remember that, but he must have, he did for some reason or another. Remembered when it was.
Well, kids today know who have the fast cars in town. Did you know who had the fast horses?
Yes.
I mean, did you know pretty much who you could beat and who you couldn't?
Yeah, Peter Penlopik had a fast horse. D. Baker had a fast horse. Jay Bocci had two beautiful, beautiful horses, bays,
mm-hmm.
and they were fast horses. And Pete Van Zylen had a good horse,
uh-huh.
fast horse. There were several other ones around. I recall Dr. Reynolds had a pretty fast horse, too.
And some of the young guys have reputations of being sort of hot rodders like we think of kids who fly around a little bit today.
The young fellas didn't get much chance to drive those horses.
Didn't they?
No. I don't think their parents would let them have them.
I see.
It wasn't like it is with the cars today. I say we were very fortunate. My grandfather would trust us with any horse he had in the barn. And there were lots of times when he didn't know anything about the horse either. He'd just buy a new horse,
uh-huh.
trade with somebody, and he'd get a horse and hadn't driven him himself or anything. And we'd say, well, we're going to take that new horse. That's all right. He'd be careful. He always used to tell us, be careful with him because I don't know anything about him. Well, we found out about him. Well, we find out whether they were any good or not.
Did he have some that were fast?
Yes, he did.
He did, huh?
Yeah, some real good ones. Real, real good ones.
What would you do about sick horses? Were there vets nearby?
Yes.
Was there a veterinarian
around? There was a Dr. Rose over in Spring Lake who lived. Dr. Rose's daughter is still living. Her name is Irwin now, Maud Rose Irwin. Lives on Lake Avenue right at the Country Club Road.
Oh.
And Doc Rose used to come to the barn quite often to take care of the horses.
Uh-huh.
My granddad was kind of a horse doctor in himself.
He
didn't need a doctor too often. But he...
Well, he made that wonderful cure. We started talking about that right at the end of the program last time.
Is that what we were talking about?
Yeah, that's how we ended. We ran out of time. We were on that Spix-Spavin cure there.
Well, that's right. Yeah, well, he was pretty well able to take care of them. He didn't float their teeth. And by floating their teeth, I mean file them down. When the horse got a little bit older and his teeth got uneven, they used to have a file, a real coarse file, and they would, what they call, float them. They'd get in there and file those teeth down so that they weren't sharp and wouldn't cause him to bite his lip any trouble in eating.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't do that.
Well, I've met horses like that, don't they?
Well, I don't think it hurt so much.
No?
They took that pretty easy.
Yeah.
It was a real coarse file. It wasn't like the dentist has a grinder. I suppose today they do that with a horse, with an electric Grinder, but in those days, he's had them around the barn, around the house. I remember there were some of them laying around there when we were kids yet, after my grandfather was gone. Yeah. Doc Rose would come down and do that.
Well, as the motorized vehicle business picked up, Grand Haven had its share of that, too, didn't it? Didn't they make some cars and trucks there for a little while, John?
Yeah, they made... Well, they made the Van Motor Car down on North 6th Street, about where the county office is now, the county road commission office.
Oh, yeah.
And that was quite a car. And they made the Lorraine here, and they made Panhard trucks here, and they made another one called the Alter. And that was out in the plant.
Was that a car or a truck?
That was a car. That was out in the plant where Gardner Denver is now, out on Fulton Street.
I mean, there are three different automobile manufacturing companies right here in Grand Haven?
Not all at one time.
No.
And every one of them lost money.
Did they?
They couldn't make it.
Why was that? Wasn't the car any good or what?
Yeah, the cars were good, but they cost too doggone much. They had to buy all the parts and put them together, and Ford was making them and making all the parts and everything else, and so was Chevrolet, and you couldn't compete.
Mm-hmm.
They were good automobiles.
Were they?
Yes.
Does anybody ever have any pictures of them? Do you still see any pictures?
I have a picture in the office, and it's during World War One, and it was in during a bond drive. And I recognize Walter Boyd as the driver of this car. And Bill Wiles, who was just recently passed away, was in it. And this was on a bond drive during World War One. They were selling, what did they call them in those days, victory bonds?
Victory bonds.
Yeah. And I think one of the fellows was Bud Vinn. They used to take... any soldier that was returned from France for any reason or another, and send him around on these bond drives. I believe Tony Van Horsten was in it, too. And Bill Baker. Bill Baker was a very civic-minded fellow. He was the manager of Beaudry's Dry Good and Rug Store. That's down in what's now the Dime Store, in this Masonic Temple building. They were in this car, and this, I tried to find out what car this was, but it was, it really didn't have a name. It was an assembled car.
Assembled car?
They picked up the parts, new.
Yeah.
New parts, had a Continental motor in it.
Who did this?
I don't know.
Oh.
I never could find out who did it. Who made it? But they only made a few of them. It didn't go. Of course, these were touring cars.
Yeah, but it was a customized job.
Customized
just put
job,
together.
Yeah. But the Van Motor Company, that was a as I recall, that was kind of a roadster sort of a deal. That didn't last long.
Did it?
And then the Alter. That was another. That was a good looking little car.
Was that a little car?
Small car. And they made quite a few of them. Then the Panhard Truck Company. Then they made a good truck.
Panhard?
Yeah. And during World War One, some of the boys saw Panhard trucks in France.
Really?
And they had a feeling of, you feel. Oh, my gosh, there's a Panhard truck. There's
all
still
the way
a
from
Grand
Haven, huh?
Yeah. But that didn't last long either.
Yeah.
I remember Vin had one of those. And... their first truck, I think, was a GMC. And as I recall it, it was a hard-tired platform truck.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't have a standard shift then either, did they? I mean, now all gear shifts follow
standard,
a pattern.
Yeah.
But it seems to me, didn't Rio have one that
Rio
was backwards?
Rio had one backward, and Buick was backward, too.
Backwards?
Yeah. The Buick
was it different. Just completely backwards, John, of the way you normally shift?
Well, low was where high is, yes.
Oh, yeah.
And let's see, Buick and Rio were different.
Uh-huh.
They weren't either one of them the same as the standard shift now. I remember when Vin first got their first truck, or one of their first ones. John Venn was the one of the Venn brothers, was a very fine, great, big, strong man. And he was afraid of riding trucks. He always rode with one foot out of the truck.
Always, he was ready to jump.
Ready to jump. And he did jump, and he jumped at the wrong time.
Uh-oh.
Truck was going across the country club crossing, and the driver of the truck, they were eating candy. He was a great guy. Well, we thought he was an old man.
Uh-huh.
But I learned later he was 51 years old.
Really?
At that time. And he was sitting in the cab of this truck, and the driver, he couldn't drive, and he didn't want to drive.
Yeah.
He didn't, never wanted to learn to drive. When he had a touring car, and Bud used to drive it, and if Bud didn't want to drive it, why, I would drive it. Like on a Sunday afternoon, they had friends around here, they wanted to go out in the country and visit them. Why?
Yeah.
Bud would say, I asked John to drive. And of course, I was tickled to death to get a chance to drive an automobile. So I would drive it. But anyway, he always rode in this truck with one foot hanging out. And they went across the country club crossing, eating a bag of candy. He was quite a guy. Really, he was about as well-liked a man as I ever knew. And everybody liked him.
Mm-hmm.
He and the driver were eating a bag of candy. And all of a sudden, he looked up and saw a train. The truck driver stepped on the gas, and he got across. But Mr. Venn, John Venn, jumped.
Uh-oh.
And he didn't get across.
Got hit by the train?
He was killed.
Oh, bad news.
Yeah.
Huh.
That was about 1921. I was about 21 years old.
Uh-huh. Then.
And he was such a popular man that they had to have his funeral in the armory.
Really?
Yeah. And it was full.
Wow.
You know, I think that's one of the things I'll never, never, never in my life forget.
Mm-hmm. You know? I imagine accidents were sort of a new thing.
It was.
Weren't they?
Particularly a train and an automobile.
Yeah,
truck.
When you had horses, there were certain kind of accidents you could predict. But I don't imagine you had a lot of the intersection collisions and junk like that.
You had a runaway once in a while or a wagon tipped over or something of that sort, but never... Not much in the line of accidents.
No. Did you have enclosed cars? Were some of them enclosed then, John?
Not back in those days.
Not then, huh?
Later on, I remember Bronsma did get an enclosed car. I remember the first car I had when I worked for Oaks was a 1916 Ford Model T.
Oh, yeah.
With one door.
Oh, yeah.
Just
well, that's
door.
What Darrell has.
Is that a one door?
Sure. Huh? It's in the middle.
In the middle on the
right-hand
side.
Yeah, that's what he's got. And you should go drive that. It's probably just like yours.
And you've got to crawl through the seat.
Yeah, the seat tips up.
Sure. This did, too. You could this passenger alongside the driver could ride either forward or back.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be darned. A big oval window in the back of it. Is that the same?
Sure.
High?
So
aren't
they high?
Over? Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. You look down at everybody's car, and he's got one of those exhaust horns, one of those whistles on the exhaust, too.
Oh.
That was illegal, wasn't it, to have a horn on that?
Well, I don't know. They had them once in a while, but it cost a little money. This, this one that I drove was, pretty good automobile.
Was
I
it?
Remember when the boss traded it in on a house.
Oh, no.
I felt bad because I'd had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of work with it, too. And, but that's the way things go.
John, we've come to the end of the road for today.
Oh, my gosh, already? Well, this has been fun.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be on the second Tuesday of the month from now, and we'll look for you again next month.
You going to run it Tuesday?
Yeah. So the next, we'll look for you again next month, okay?
Okay.
Thanks a lot,
John. We'll try
again,
yeah.
All right,
okay,
goodbye.
Okay, so long, Doug.